I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation's The Pull List, the show that does it all for gaming culture. And I'm here, your host, Kofi Outlaw, with my Comic Book Nation co-host, Matthew Aguilar, to once again drop the bonus episode recapping Halo Season 2. This time we are talking Episode 7, Thermopylae, which is, if you do not know the name of the battle that you already do know from Zack Snyder's 300 with the Spartans versus Xerxes and the Persian hordes, it's a name that's come up in this season. And this is the penultimate episode of Halo Season 2. We only have one more episode left to discuss. And joining us today at the end of the show, we will have Colonel Ackerson himself. Joseph Morgan will be talking with Matthew Aguilar about all things Halo. So be sure to stick around at the end of our recap episode to hear that. Also, if you are just jumping into these because of Halo, we are Comic Book Nation, the show that does it all for geek culture. We have a whole series of podcasts out there. Make sure you subscribe in addition to our Halo recaps. We have our regular quick save segments covering all things geek culture, anime initiative that covers anime, our regular main comic book live shows on Friday. For all you MCU heads, you can head over to the Phase Zero feed and check that out. And for all our Pokemon fans, we even have a Pokemon podcast called A Wild Pokemon Has Appeared, and check out that feed as well. All right, now that you're plugged in, let's get to Halo Season 2, Episode 7. Matt, we just got done talking about kind of an Episode 6 that really was a mix of tying off things from, you know, seasonal buildups, you know, conflicts between characters, a couple questions that needed answering, and also setting up things for a pretty exciting run towards the end of the season. Episode 7 kind of continues to do that, but layers in some pretty big new stakes, and we could just get it right out of the way at the beginning of the episode. We see the damn Halo. We see the damn Halo ring. It's there now. Everybody can relax. We see the Halo ring. Okay?
We even got the music.
We got the ring. It's here. Oh. Anyway, so we could take that right off the table. Now the Halo rings are here. So we are getting, I mean, as of this episode, let's just say it up front. Like, this is a remixed version of where the first game kind of begins, right? We can see that now. The first game, if you don't remember, begins with the UNSC really in peril, Admiral Keyes activating Master Chief. The Covenant storming their ship. They send him out with Cortana, and they drop him on the Halo ring. Instead, in this version of Halo, we're going to see what looks to be an epic battle in the finale episode where there's a lot of factions. You know, it's funny. You got the UNSC military and the Covenant each fighting each other, but also fighting within themselves. And so, and in the middle of this, you have some main players like Master Chief, Kai, McKee, and Perez. And I didn't think everything was perfect with this episode. I think where I felt like cohesion before with kind of how everybody was together and included and kind of important, I think we're starting to split a little bit more. You know, we have the Halsey, Quan, and Miranda storyline, the Soren and Lara stuff, which is kind of weird. I want to get into that. But overall, I mean, for where season two has taken these characters, it feels like we're getting to real resolution points where these characters are now new or just rebooted with different perspectives or ideas, and that we're in for one hell of a battle in the finale and possibly the biggest battle. And Halo has a lot to prove. We can be honest. Halo does have a lot to prove with this season two finale after that extended PS1 cutscene we got in the first season for the finale. So I have big hopes, but also big confidence. Matt, how'd you feel about this episode?
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think the Soren part feels the most separated from everything because it didn't right up until this episode. Like it still felt connected in a way. But here, I'm trying to figure out what the end goal is there, because like Soren himself kind of threw me on like multiple fronts. Like he's thinking one thing one second and then his actions say something else, right? So he's going through a lot of things. So I know that's part of the story, but just as a vehicle compared to connected to everything else, it just feels like it's its own thing now. I'm interested to see how they weave that back in, because obviously it's going to play some sort of role, right, in the finale. And the Halsey stuff might feel that way too, but I thought for that being so important to the like establishing what this is and the halo of it all, I thought it really worked. Like I thought that still stayed connected, and it also fit with a lot of the pieces that Quan's story has been telling and what did they activate, all those kinds of things. Like there's things there that connect it more to everything else. So for that, I was really excited. But those two are kind of these side adventures going on while this big core piece is moving. And the rate of that is like, this is really all about reunions. Like this whole episode is, you know, Chief finally getting his hands on Ackerson, right? It's Perez and their reunion, his reunion with Kai, and not a Kai that's like beating the snot out of him, like a Kai that's like a friend and things like that. So there's a lot happening here. And I thought it's just building on, I thought this episode really is the epitome of what we've been talking about all season. When he finally gets the armor, it matters. When the halo is finally like established as a thing, it matters. I care. When the music hits, I care. It brings up there's a reaction from me because I'm invested in these people. And so when he finally gets the armor back and he's walking out, and I love all the posters that are talking about him being dead, you know, and like Inspire and all these things. And then the conversation he has with Perez as he's, you know, before he walks out and the people see him, like all that stuff matters because I care about John and I care about the relationships along the way, and all that stuff makes it, those landmark items feel important. So to me, this is like the epitome of that, right? And you have so much happening. Like there's a ton that happens here between like all the Arbiter stuff and McKee, and like that feels important. Like there's a lot going. I thought this was a really good penultimate episode, but I agree with you. I don't know what to think about the Soren part. I will kind of hold judgment until the finale and see how that's woven back in, because that one I'm a little confused on.
All right. There's three specific things I want to jump into. First, you touched on this, which was kind of the Halsey and Miranda of it all. What I like about that and what they did with that is they're weaving in, even though we're getting a payoff of a halo, they're weaving in new layers of mystery slowly but surely. And as Halo fans, we know what they kind of deftly did there was introduce two things and the connected history of them. It's they're in a forerunner kind of relic base or the Forerunner city or precursors. You never know. I can never remember my Forerunners from my precursors, but this looked, the technology looked like the Forerunners and like the Sentinels and all that stuff that they activated. But they also discovered the lab where the Forerunners probably created the Flood, and that was the scientist and all of that, and the grave mind. And so all of those things, which quickly blow an already complicated, you know, alien mythos for people, which is enough to try to stomach with the Covenant and the different races of the Covenant and different factions and their religion and all that. And then to introduce like not one, but two, and quickly leaning to three more alien races that are key here, the precursors, the Forerunners, the Flood, and explaining those connections. Like, I like how they're dripping it in as a mystery and they're doing it slowly, because all of this at once, when you try to like sort through all this, it gets so crazy. So it was, I think they kind of handled that part really well. Yeah, I wanted to, you and I, the second thing I want to touch on is that you and I were talking this whole season about people who were criticizing the show and Master Chief and the armor and what were in, no, he's not in the armor. And this has been big growth for you, because for you to let go of your helmet thing is massively big. It shows how well this show has earned it. But you and I said the thing that we were most interested in and the thing that this has pulled off in this episode is what hit for me the hardest is when people are like, oh, Chief, you're back and we're going to be together and we're all going to go fight together. And he's like, nah, like I got to go do this other thing. Like I have something else to do. Like I know my destiny is to do this and I got to go do that. And when you have that Cortana Master Chief against the hordes in the games, now we understand the price of that. It's not just this one person and this other person. We understand how they get to a place of being them two against the world. Like that feels earned. And Master Chief in that helmet is the kind of complicated hero. Before, we just had a blank slate for you to fill in as the gamer. Now we have a complicated hero that we need. A guy who's going out alone, but very much we know has a human side, human connections, human cares he's leaving behind to do this mission. And that's a much better kind of heroic arc to do. That's the Frodo, right? He's just a buff ass Frodo. He's got to get that ring to Mount Doom. So we get that. And that's a much better hero thing that you don't get from the games ever. Like you don't really get that. So kudos to them for that.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now, that's the good part. Let's talk about the weird part. I've liked almost just every moment and every scene that's filmed this season, but that whole thing with Soren and Lara and the gladiator thing was, that was pretty weird. That kind of took me out of the episode, and I was just kind of like, what? It was the first time this season I was like, what are we doing? Like, this feels like that. Feels like I'm back in that horrific Quan Soren episode from season one where we just kind of left everything hanging after that. But yeah, I don't really know what they're going for there. Like, we didn't have enough time with Kessler or enough scenes with Kessler to know where he's been or to get his whole side of this Spartan training thing. It's just kind of come out of nowhere. And we only get like one brief sequence of seeing him do it. And it's weird. And his reaction to seeing his dad beat these guys down and essentially save him is weird. Like, the kid was getting in the ring to go do some violence, or he knew something was coming. He gets saved and he's just like, I don't know about you. And it's just like, okay, is he brainwashed already? Like, you know, and we don't get any clear answers. And then just to have Lara, who's, you know, handled herself, all things, just get like weirdly snatched in some fog. Like, I really didn't know what to make of this scene. And I was kind of hoping with the way they set it up last episode with the weird stuff on the floor and the ominousness of it all, that there was going to be some bigger payoff here. But yeah, I really feel like I'm going to see how the finale wraps this up. But like, right now, that's the one thing where I'm like, okay, we're in danger of like really maybe dropping this one. Like, I don't know about this one. What about you, man?
Yeah, no, I feel the same way.
It stuck out because it was also the namesake of the episode, right? Like,
right.
Where they're at is Thermopylae, which is supposed to teach Spartans how to fight together against immeasurable odds.
Yeah. Well, in the first part, I understood what they were going for with when he's going into his past and he's talking about like you have to withstand this because you're fighting back, obviously, but like it's not the whole point of that is not you're not going to win. And so you're just, you know, it's what you can withstand and all this other stuff. And you're supposed to fight as a team. And so I even understood when he tells her, she's like, no, we got to go get him. He's like, no, like he has to do this. And if we take this from him, like it's going to mean something. And then she's like, but that's not a family. Like you've moved past that. Right. So I understood where that was coming from. But so then it just makes the reaction that he goes in to save him at all weird, because he just like five seconds ago, it's like, no, it's important that he does this on his own. Then he saves him. Then the like brutality of him, you know, beating down this guy, like Kessler's like shocked by that. Not really. Like, it seemed odd because like, he's also been in this thing for a minute. Right. So he's also kind of preconditioned. It was weird. Like, I didn't know. All of a sudden it felt like, okay, we're going in like two different directions and I can't quite get a beat on that. And then like, why did they take him? It was, I don't know. There was a lot of things that like need explanation for that whole thing to make sense for me. And it just feels weird right now. Like, it just, that's why it sticks out so much from everything else. Like, it just feels like those things aren't connected. They were up until that point. I will be, that is one that I feel like either needs to be a big seed for like season three and they go, hey, this is really what that's about, but we can't explore that yet. Like that's going to be something we move into here. I need some kind of signal of that in the finale, or I need that wrapped up in a way that feels like that wasn't just, we didn't know what to do with them. Like right now, it's just really odd.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with Soren, there's the spaces are kind of quickly shrinking for several characters in this show, I feel like. I feel like Soren and Lara are two of those characters, like, unless we get some real massive payoff to that, because seeing Quan with Halsey and Miranda was already more interesting to me than seeing her with, like, Soren and Lara. And right. It's just, unless... this has to be about like Soren and like where he's either going to be embrace a kind of Spartan mentality or he's going to embrace an anti-Spartan mentality. Like, and one of those things has to happen and he has to pick a side because he's essentially just been kind of neutral pirating for a while. And it's like, yeah, he's reconciled. We've done all this work to reconcile his past, make him face certain things about himself. And like either he's going to be with a family and kind of be like anti-Spartan or he's going to be like, I got to do a duty bigger than this. And I can't just sit here and be family man. But either way, there's got to be some kind of payoff to that. And he's got to be a figure that stands against like whatever's coming next, the flood, whatever. Like he's got to be a major player in some of that. Otherwise, I really don't know what we're doing. And the other one would be like McKee, I feel like, is quickly coming down to just like, we can shave this down to an arbiter and the chief, right? Like we don't necessarily right. need this other person, but you know, that's nothing against Charlie Murphy and McKee, who's been much more measured this season and kind of almost in her own show. I would love to just hear from her about like what if the Covenant Squad, it must be their own gang. Cause they're just like in mocap suits on sound stages while the rest yeah. of the crew is like getting more practical sets and stuff this season and you know, whatnot. So do they form like little gangs on set and it's just like Covenant crew? But yeah, that's an interesting question for later. But yeah, I mean, but by season three, in assuming season two ends, you know, with this furious battle and then the survivors who make it to Halo, like, yeah, I can see this thing getting pared down and what's happening off world needs to be a lot more select. And I like the Quan, Miranda, Halsey thing that's kind of going on, even yeah, though Halsey like kind of dips at the end of that. That was like an interesting scene, the three of them together.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll talk about, and we should talk about before we get, you know, Joseph Morgan in here, is seeing what a good kind of not even villain, but like antagonist Ackerson has been this season. And this episode showing, you know, the complicated nature of who he is. And they just good writing is like building up a character over a season. Like we know now it's not like sudden turn to the angels. We know this guy has compassion from what we saw with his father and about his sister and his complicated relationship with the Spartans, which I love that he's never like thrown that out into like Master Chief and them's face and like been screaming in another dramatic show, like my sister was a Spartan. Like, you know, you just get yeah. that through backstory with Halsey. And just seeing him kind of get to a place of the decisions that he makes in this episode when he finally kind of realizes, you know, what is actually happening. And I like what they did in just a small mystery with this spike turning into like this massive bomb. And you thought like, oh, it's just a suicide mission for the soldiers and that's messed up. It was like, no, this is like a crazy right. suicide mission for everybody. And, you know, Perengoski and all that is, he's done a wonderful job. And like, we loved him on Titans when he was getting to play like a much more arch character, but like, yeah, this is good writing and character building up over a season to bring us to where things are with Ackerson and kind of still he's not off the board and still a potentially really pivotal player. So wonderful work from Joseph Morgan.
Yeah, no, we in our, you know, we'll get to it in a minute, but he brings up a really good point about how Ackerson's story plays out even before Chief comes back into the picture. And all of that is just like, there was an arc there for this character that, you know, I even said, like, I've been conflicted about this character throughout the entire season because there's things to love and there's things to despise. And you from episode to episode, you're just kind of like, he lives in the gray, right? And it's always what's so fascinating about him. And so this episode is like, you know, the epitome of that, I feel like. And I hope, you know, he talks about, you know, we're wishing for some big things. Hopefully, you know, me and you get to do this, you know, again for season three. But I will be very interested to see where this group of characters goes, and him very much included. I hope we get to see more of him.
Well, I think, I mean, that about puts us in the perfect place. I think we both are ready to sit back, catch episode 8 along with everybody else, and just see if Halo can really reach that Game of Thrones level of pulling off a big battle episode and what that looks like and where it places us for season 3. But this has been a great season to jump back into, in, you know, far more enjoyable to be doing these talks than we had in season 1, which we were just kind of saying, yeah, but there's promise. No, this has been enjoyable. And I can't wait to hear from Joseph Morgan along with everybody else. So let's go ahead and throw to Matt's interview with Halo star Joseph Morgan, who plays Colonel James Ackerson.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Getting started, there's a lot to go over in this episode 7. Man, I cannot believe we're almost done here. We're on the home stretch. It's unbelievable.
I know, it's crazy. I feel for those people whose shows drop all at once, because as much as I love to binge, there is an excitement of sort of stringing it out and seeing how people enjoy the journey as it comes week by week, you know, episodically. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same. I typically I should phrase it this way. I love the choice of whether to binge or not and how many episodes and whatever. But I gotta say, the weekly hit on this has just been stellar throughout the season. And also I feel like I could give James Ackerson, and therefore you, any like personal like poem of mine, you would make it sound amazing and also like so layered and maybe a hint of evil. Like I almost want to see you do cameos just because I want to see you do so many different takes on things. James Ackerson, what a character addition to the show. Just going back a little bit before we get to this episode in particular, what has the experience been like for you this season, and what have you enjoyed most about it?
I've loved it. You know, I was a huge fan of the Halo franchise, the games and everything before I joined the show. So that in itself was a thrill to see that come to life and to be walking on those sets and all of that. I think the writing has been incredible. It really elevated the show. And that's largely down to David Wiener, the new showrunner who brought me on. I think his work has been amazing. And that's where those layers are found. You know, you mine the writing and you find all these different opportunities. And he's really open to exploring that further as well. So that's been thoroughly enjoyable for me. The other thing is, I've got to act with almost every character on the show,
right?
You know, and I continue to through the end of the season. You'll see me act with some other people, so have scenes with other people that we haven't seen Ackerson with before, and so that's been a real pleasure as well. And part of that, David told me, was we want to sort of figure out the dynamics of where we like Ackerson, you know, with the, so it's almost like we're trying him out with these different people. But that for me has been enjoyable, hugely enjoyable, because there's such a talented bunch on the show, and I get to, you know, perform with all of them and see how different actors approach a scene and to work in this part of that process. So I've loved that.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that too, because that's been one of the things I've loved about this season with the character specifically, is that you get to see him up against different foes in a lot of ways. And because everyone's a little different in how they come into the situation with him, it's like from scene to scene, he'll be talking to one person and, you know, spinning a yarn of, you know, altruistic heroism. You're doing it for this. And then in like the next scene, he's, you know, playing puppets. You know what I mean? Just like manipulating someone. But and it's also conflicting because the characters also, there are some very like likable qualities that have kind of come out through the season a little bit. And you also relate to him because he's going through personal stuff. It's an interesting, like the character really has run the gamut a bit.
He has. Yeah. And I think episode three for me was the episode that showed that the most, because we got such a variety. I got a lovely text from my good friend about that episode saying, who did your agent pay for you to get that episode? Because you got to literally, you got some of the most sort of interesting scenes in the episode. And they also show all these different facets of the character. So it's almost like a showcase for Akerson, you know, episode three. And especially like what you were saying, because I think I go from that scene with Akerson's dad where he's shaving him and such a kind of really heartfelt scene to a scene with Halsey where he couldn't be more sort of gloating and like, well, it's a shame I have to leave you here, but don't worry, your work will live on, you know, you won't.
Yes.
Your work will. And I thought that, like, what a lovely, because obviously we filmed those things weeks apart. So it was lovely to see it all come together and to join the dots in that journey, you know?
And then what's interesting about that is then we get that paid off, or at least contextualized later in the season, right? Because then you learn the things about why he dislikes Halsey and the real history behind that. And then you go, oh, I can't even blame him on that one, you know? So it's been this constant tug of war between how I feel about Akerson throughout the season.
Well, that's really nice to hear, because that was my aim, you know, to get audience members to feel conflicted. I think I wanted to present someone who initially came across as a sort of villain. You think, oh, the new boss who's gonna, you know, oh great, he's gonna be the villain. Well, that, it's a bit of a trope, but then we wanted to kind of flip that on its head a bit to make you feel a little confused and maybe even start to root for him in moments. So I appreciate that, thank you.
Well, and getting into, you know, episode seven, spoilers, obviously they'll come out, you know, after the episodes come out and everything. So it's funny because there's a really a full arc for Akerson and teeing up something that will, you know, likely be followed up on, obviously, in the finale. But you really get a kind of the reunion between Akerson and Chief that has been brewing since Reach. And then there's also the, you know, very much smaller time period, but the reunion between Akerson and Kai, who he's, you know, kind of had a different relationship with since, you know, Chief was, you know, thought dead and all those things. And they've come full circle in a very short time as well. You know, and it's not that the character, what I really enjoyed about it was, it's not like their things are being erased. Like there's a retcon of like, oh, I was really like a good person all along. It follows the same types of beats of like, this character was always conflicted. There were always things that, you know, choices that looking back probably, you know, weren't correct. But you're still, there is still an arc there. And I appreciate it that like we retained everything with that arc. Do you kind of feel the same way?
Yeah, that's always the goal, isn't it? Because what I find troublesome when I'm watching something is when a character has a change, but suddenly you think, well, suddenly they feel like this and everything, it doesn't really track with everything that we've seen them, every decision we've seen them make. And so it's important, I think, that, you know, a lot of that is in the writing, but it's also our job as actors to really try and, like I said, join the dots and make it feel like he's still the same guy who, were he back in that situation, he would make the same choices. He just didn't have all the information and all the pieces, you know? And I think, some of that is his personal feelings coming into it, like his hatred of Halsey, his resentment towards her. And some of it is his ego as well. You know, he obviously thrives on being in power and being in command. And there's a tremendous amount of pressure that comes with that as well. And so, yeah, I wanted to make sure we feel like he is still the same guy. But he's a guy who's been through something, you know, as everybody has, by the, you know, because of Reach. That was just such a dramatic thing to affect all of those people in different ways, and for him feeling responsible as well. We've got to feel the weight of that.
And there's also something to be said for, he's very pragmatic and realistic in decisions he's made along the way. And that doesn't change here. It's just the circumstances change of, okay, well, Perangowski's made it clear I'm getting thrown under the bus and this is all getting left in my hands. So now with that information, the decision I make is what? But then there's also, Spartan Threes, like that group. What can you kind of tell us about how they have kind of changed his outlook a bit? Because it feels different.
Well, they were supposed to be, his legacy. And he felt like in the beginning, like he was, logistically, he was creating the much more affordable weapon of these Spartan Threes who would, still be highly trained and still be competent, but get the job done. They would be more effective than the Spartan Twos because there's just simply more of them and you can send them in like the Spartan Twos were a building block for the Threes. But I think, and he always thought that the spike in Perangowski's plan was to, that it would be a shutdown, that the Spartan Threes would then be able to get off the ship and they would be able to complete the mission and that they would come out of this heroic and they need to believe in themselves. And that's what he told Kai, your job is to train them so that they believe it. They believe that they're Spartans. And when he finds out they never had a chance, that they were cannon fodder, I think that is the turning point for him. So it's interesting because while we're talking spoilers, there's a scene in episode 7 where he has the spike and he analyzes it and he realizes that. He realizes this is to turn the ship into a bomb. The Spartan Threes were never going to make it. They were simply there to get the job done and they were expendable. And he's leaving the room and he's going to take action, right? He's going to do something, but we never get to see what he's going to do because he's intercepted by Master Chief and Kai, who are out for blood and they want the armor and they blame him. But my feeling was always like, that was the turning point for him regardless. So you see, when he's trying to reason with John, he also, by the time they get to the room where he's taking him to his armor, he's going in freely. Ackerson's taking him in freely and he's letting John in. And then he's, says, so what now? What do we do now? Like, I'm a part of this now. I got no place else to go. But I always felt like regardless, Ackerson was going to go and confront Perangowski or he was going to do something because that matters to him. In that way, he has invested, even emotionally, I think, in the Spartan Threes, in their lives and their training and their him being a part of that.
Yeah, it's, I didn't even really think about that, but that's, yes, because he does feel like all of that happens before, being faced with John. Right. Then just things are, then it's just like dealing with the fire that's in front of you, which is being, choked against the wall by a very strong man.
Tells him he's got to go and, he's got to go and take the fall and confront Perangowski. But if you watch the scene again, you'll see when he realizes that he's going to do something anyway, he's going to do something, but he that gives him, that brings together a plan that needs to happen, Which his plan probably didn't involve him sacrificing himself for the good of it. That was John's idea, which he had to kind of go along with and did in the end. But yeah, there would have been some kind of action regardless.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see so many of the characters kind of coming together as we wind down the season. But really, it's wind up, right? Because there's so much that gets set up here for the big finale. And, obviously a lot throughout the season, we've had a look at the Spartans outside of the armor that we kind of typically associate with them, especially with Chief. And I feel like it's given a very different and much more of an appreciation for what that combination is, because we've seen so much and in crucial moments like Reach is all done, outside of the armor. You're seeing these very human people, albeit, very strong and very skilled, but still, outside of that immovable force, that is there. Do you feel like that's been kind of part of what's made this season special? And also now that we're in 7 and we get that reunion, it I feel like it matters more.
I think so. I think that's a part of it. I think you've got to know how to deal with it. When you're dealing with something which obviously carries as much weight with the fandom as the armor and the helmet and to wear it or not to wear it and all of that, you know, I think there's, I feel there's never a point in season two where we feel like, why did he take his helmet off here? He's in the middle of, you know, yeah. It's all logical and it all plays out as it would, you know, I believe. But yeah, I think there is something interesting to, you know, that it's that, you know, you never needed the armor was always within you, John, you know, but I do think, yeah, it shows the weight of being Master Chief and what that armor means, not only physically, but also in terms of people looking up to him and being inspired by him as a symbol and what that carries, you know, and, Ackerson flagged it early on, you know, he said, Chief, at the end of the day, Master Chief is just a man in a suit, meaning I could put someone else in that suit and people are still going to go, hey, that's Master Chief, you know, let's go to war and fight and die for him. So, yeah, I think this season has been very strategic and kind of surgical about where he's been wearing the suit and where he hasn't. I think it's interesting they had Kessler with a little plastic mask on, almost like a little nod to that as well. And there was, I'll tell you something, there was a scene in an original script of episode 3 that was taken out, so we never filmed it, where Ackerson is alone in his office and he puts the helmet on just to sort of see how it feels. That's my biggest regret, that we didn't film that scene, because I would have loved to have done that. I would have chewed up the scenery with that scene, I tell you.
Yeah,
my feeling is it's improved the season and it's been done really well, and I think it's sort of always served the story, which is important.
Well, I could do this forever, so I immensely appreciate the time. I know I got to let you go. Before we go, obviously we got the big finale here. You know, obviously without getting into, you know, big spoilers or anything like that, what can you tease about the finale and how fans might feel?
You know, you'd have to be crazy to do what we did in the finale. So I think it turns everything on its head. It's incredibly exciting to me being part of that story, because really, if you think about Ackerson's story, the arc kind of finishes by the end of episode 7. So where do we go with him now? Right.
Right.
Well, that's what we do. We flip everything over and you know, there's such an embargo on the episode, like there's such big spoilers that they're everybody's very, very tense about not letting it out, not saying anything before midnight when it drops on Paramount. But it just makes me go, they've got to do season 3. They've got to do season 3, because we can't just leave it there. Now let's see what happens, you know. So I'm so excited to see it as a fan of the Halo franchise, and also for everybody else to see it.
Well, this has been awesome. I can't wait to see the finale as well. You know, I hope we're right back here doing season 3 conversations too. So, you know, all the best success on the series. And of course, you can check out all of our coverage right here on Quick Save. And back to you, Kofi.
All right. We want to thank Joseph Morgan for coming on Comic Book Nation's Quick Save and talking about Halo Season 2 with us. We've enjoyed all of the cast members who have joined us this season. Matt, you have been a king amongst kings for keeping on top of the Halo beat and sitting down and making all the cast feel comfortable and welcome here on Comic Book Nation. So thank you, buddy, for your fluffy personality. We love you for that. All right. Enough said. Enough said. This is Comic Book Nation Quick Save. You can always find our regular Quick Save segments every week on our Comic Book Nation feed. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms, and we will see you next time for the Halo Season 2 finale, baby. We're going to be going out with a bang. So join me and Matthew Aguilar next week, and keep watching Halo every week on Paramount+. We'll see you next time. Peace.